was about 2 years younger than most of my classmates, and I remember feeling I ended up, New York City had a semi-semester arrangement. You got promoted not by the year, but by the semester. And so I remember I went from 1A to 2A to 3A. Oh. Skipped 1B, skipped 2B, and then skipped a semester.
Because you were precocious?
Because I was precocious.
Uh-huh.
And so they moved me along.
Mm-hmm. Now, were you just have this native intelligence, or did you read a lot, or did you...
I'm not sure that I read a lot, and I'm not sure... I think it was that I was doing very well, and they may have had an overcrowded 1B, so they put me into 2A, you know.
Uh-huh.
I don't think it was that I felt troubled by being or bored or anything of that sort. So that they just pumped me along. And as I recall, I felt rather bad because most of the other kids were bigger, taller, stronger than I was. And so that was the problem for this little pipsqueak trying to compete in basketball and trying to compete in other things. And the nice thing about going to camp was that at least those were my eight people my same age, and
you are
felt much more comfortable as a boy at camp than I did with my school classmates, who I had a real sense were older than I was.
Did you play ball in the streets?
Yeah, stickball.
Mm-hmm.
Used to go skating, roller skating, ball bearings. Remember skating up to Bronx Park, must have been about 3 miles or so, and back. We played stoop ball, we played stickball with a rubber spalding ball and a sawed-off broom handle. And then stoop ball, there were these steps up to the houses, so you throw the ball against the stoop and see if you can catch it before it bounces. What other games did we play?
Were you a chess player?
Eventually I learned it, but I never really did much chess, no. I remember doing a lot of reading at the time.
Were there a library?
Oh, yeah, there was a library. About a 10, 15 minute walk, and I was a pretty voracious reader at the time, reading lots of biographies and other stuff appropriate for that age, I guess, and...
Did you have a religious education then?
Some. My mother was clearly Jewish and strongly identified with Judaism and with the world of the Jews, but religious education didn't come up until it was ready to become bar mitzvah. And maybe at 11 or so, she sent me to Hebrew school in a little Orthodox shul around the corner. I do remember that there was this Orthodox shul just right around the corner.
Do you remember the name of it?
No. It was the shul. and about a block further down, I remember the conservative synagogue, which I remember as being in a rather large house. I mean, it wasn't a synagogue built specifically for that. It was obviously a house that was taken over as a synagogue. And I ended up visiting there some years later. And while we were living here, and was struck by the fact that that large synagogue was about half the size of the house I live in now. But this is a kid's view of the size of the world. Anyway, this little shul, I remember it had this rabbi who would go around pinching your ear when you misbehaved. And I guess I learned Hebrew enough so that I could get through my bar mitzvah, which of course I was going to have to do and felt appropriate to do. The party for the bar mitzvah was held in our apartment when a bunch of relatives came and friends came. And so we had a little feast. And compared to some of the bar mitzvah parties that we see today, it was rather modest.
But it was still your day.
But it was my day. And it was very, very exciting and very proud. And up to that time, I think, you know, having been part of the little shul, I would go to services, and there was a social content to the services. But it was so meaningless to me, it conveyed nothing, that I think post-bar mitzvah, I don't know if I stepped in a shul until appreciably longer period of time. It just didn't hold anything in particular. It was a neighborhood that was, I'd say, predominantly Jewish, but with strong Irish and Italian population. And I would guess that the neighborhood as a whole, maybe one-third each.
Did you go to the holidays? Did you go?
Occasionally.
The Rosh Hashanah, you did occasionally?
Yeah, occasionally. I mean, my mother didn't, but she would go down for the Yisker service. But again, she was a woman, it was an Orthodox shul, and that there was a sense of distance that she had. So there was never a sense of religiosity about her.
Were you comfortable with the Orthodox, or when you talked about this conservative show, were you longing for that?
Not at all. Not at all. That was very distant, very remote. No sense that, had no sense, I don't think I ever went in there. I do remember when I was a young kid, a few friends and I, when we were eight or thereabouts, a few friends and I learned about Friday night services, and we could go in and get a sip of wine. So we would go in and line up and get our little bit of wine.
You'd wait till the service was almost over, no doubt.
And they gave us the wine, I assume it was Manischewitz wine, and it was fine. But there was a thrill of doing it. And I don't remember. There's no question that I took off from school on the Jewish holidays, because no one went to school on the Jewish holidays. So it was clearly a school holiday. And I do remember one holiday, it was not one of the major holidays, when I was playing basketball in the schoolyard, and the class came out for recess or some sort. And I do remember the teacher saying that, you know, if it's a religious holiday, you're to do things religious rather than come to school and play basketball. But I think I went to services somewhat, but certainly don't remember it as a significant activity or as a meaningful activity in my life at that point.
Discipline was never a problem with you? Or what?
Not seriously. I remember my mother had a red strap, and she would threaten me with her red strap. And particularly when we were living with my aunt, my cousins would heckle her about using the red strap. Frankly, I don't remember ever being hit by the red strap, but it was that threat that was out there. And I do remember on occasion when I would castigate my mother about something, and and she would start crying, and I would feel very badly about it. But I think I was a pretty good kid, pretty well disciplined, and pretty much did what was expected of me. We had two other, she had two other siblings. One was an uncle.
What was his name?
Uncle Isaac.
Mm-hmm. And his last name?
Yellen. Mm-hmm. Isaac Yellen had a candy store, a classic New York candy store over in the West Bronx on Burnside Avenue and Davidson Street. I think he got up in the morning at about 6 o'clock to open the candy store. Ended up closing at about 10 o'clock at night. His wife would come in and either bring him lunch or send him home for lunch. And it was a major social fixture in the neighborhood, the way a bar might be in an Irish neighborhood. It was an important place where lots of people would come in. And so she would bring me, my mother would bring me two big bags full of baked goods to deliver to my Uncle Isaac. And so I would take the subway and go to Isaac and his wife Anna. And visit with them and sit around in the candy store and chat.
How often would you do this?
Every 2-3 months, something else, sir. Uh-huh. And he was a very pleasant man. Having gone through all this, he retired when he was 65 or so. And through a compulsion, either to leave something to his children or because of this compulsion to continue working, he ended up getting a job as a messenger boy in downtown New York. I think the notion of going from this 15-hour day, 7 days a week, to idleness was horrible, and he died a few years after that. Very interesting object lesson in retirement.
What happened to his candy store?
I think he must have sold it or something. There was somewhat of, it was a one family operation. It was too small physically for anyone else to be there, and it wasn't enough business to warrant anyone else. I wouldn't say he was overworked, but the notion of being totally tied down for 15, 18 hours a day, 7 days a week, is mind-boggling.
Tell us about some of your friends in the early years.
Trying to remember any.
You were more of a loner then.
Much more of a loner.
Mm-hmm.
Much more doing my own thing. And now, probably the closest person about my age was my cousin Harriet, who was the daughter of my mother's sister Gertrude. Gertrude was a truly free spirit.
What was her last name?
Her married name was Barlevy. But she got divorced also. I think it was a very different situation. She married a man named, I don't remember his first name, Barlevy. Had two kids with him, and I think somehow or other, I'm not sure why, that marriage broke up. And so her daughter Harriet and I were sort of in similar situations, and Harriet's about a year younger than me. Harriet had a brother named Ronald who was really a problem. He wouldn't do this, wouldn't do that, and Ronald ended up, I think, being disabled in a variety of mental ways. But Harriet sort of survived, stuck it out. And so she was probably the closest companion that I had when we got together, because we did have lots in common. She ended up living in Brighton Beach. And so I would go out and visit them every now and then, but gee, that was about an hour and a half subway ride.
Mm-hmm.
I'd do that every couple months or so, and got to know her. Her mother was rather heavy-handed, and heavy-handed on Harriet, probably even more heavy-handed on Ronald.
What was your aunt's name, Harriet's mother?
Gertrude. And Gertrude, she ended up taking her maiden name, so she went as Gertrude Yellen. Had a fascinating experience a few years ago. We were at Ellis Island, and that they have the voices of immigrants recorded and reporting on their experiences. Dolores listened and said, gee, sounds like your aunt. And indeed, there was the list of names, and it was G. Yellen. And she was talking about what it was like in Bialystok, and what it was like coming here. But that was very Gertrude. She was the egomaniac of her family. Very self-centered and very interested in experience and romance and travel. And she was a very interesting woman. I think if my mother was phenomenally self-effacing and would never thrust herself forward, Isaac sort of rambled on and did his work, was very friendly, joke-cracking individual. Gertrude was going to be Gertrude regardless. Another relative who I was close to, but he was about 7 or 8 years older, was Isaac's son, Milton. Milton was probably the first, none of Libby's kids went to college, so Milton was the first in the whole family to go to college. He was an accountant and graduated from City College and worked as an accountant for a little, I guess shortly after he graduated, he went to the business school, got a degree in accounting and got drafted and ended up in the European theater. Was there shortly after D-Day in Normandy, and ended up getting wounded and came back after the war. So he was the only connection I had to the war, and my mother would send him back boxes of cookies that he and his friends really enjoyed, and we'd get letters back from them thanking her for the cookies that she sent. And the war was pretty remote to me at the time. But it was clear there was war going on, but other than rationing, which was a rather minor imposition, there wasn't much of an effect of the war.
Were there any teachers that were influential to you?
In grade school and high school?
Mm-hmm.
But the one teacher I remember a teacher, Miss Tucker, who I think was a kindergarten teacher. And I remember liking her a lot. And then there was a grammar teacher, Miss Gernhardt, who was very demanding, but very gentle. Then there was an interesting teacher who I didn't adequately appreciate at the time, a Miss Shea, who I think was a real anti-Semite. She would talk about all the horrible ways in which the English language was getting distorted by appetizing stores, stores can't be appetizing, she would say. I also remember a feeling during school around Christmas time when we're singing Christmas carols and reading the words about Christ our Savior and such, and really feeling that sense of considerable discomfort in going through those Christmas carols. But I've reflected on Miss Shea and some of the slurs that she would fling out that I didn't appreciate at the time, but were pretty heavy-handed.
You mentioned in your neighborhood there were Irish and Italians. Did you interact minimally with?
Most of my
mm-hmm.
friends were Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
I do remember one incident when that there was one of the Irish kids at school who was sort of a very popular, good athlete kid. And I was playing stickball out in front of the shul that I mentioned. And this kid came by and I said, "Hi, Charlie," I don't remember his name, probably Mike or so. Said, "Hi, Mike." And he said, "Hi, you go to the shul? You go to this place?" I said, "Yeah." And so he started beating up on me because you killed my God. And that was pre-war period.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess it was during the war, but it was a time when anti-Semitism was widespread, and certainly this was a message that the church was conveying
mm-hmm.
to the kids at the time.
Did you encounter much anti-Semitism in your life?
Not, I would encounter slurs.
Mm-hmm.
Probably in various settings at various times. Probably the most surprising was when I got out of college in 1951. I was looking for jobs, and two things stand out. One was a letter from some large company, I don't remember which one, but we are interested in hiring engineers who are Christian, white. So that was
that
one.
That was just a regular letter.
Just a regular letter
mm-hmm.
to the employment office.
Wow.
No inhibition about sending that
mm-hmm.
at the time. And in the context of the time,
mm-hmm.
I guess not that unusual. The other was interesting. It was a major company, Sperry Gyroscope Company, which became Sperry Rand out on Long Island. And whoever applied for a job was given an interview, with the striking exception of three of us who happen to be in a Jewish fraternity. And you could tell we were in the fraternity because our address was the fraternity. We lived in the fraternity house. And so one of us went to the employment office, placement office, and said, "This looks like overt discrimination against the three of us because we're Jewish. Because we didn't have horrible records, and so it couldn't be on the basis of that." And so the placement office got in touch with them, and so they rescinded their refusal to have us for an interview. They had the interview, but none of us got an offer. So they at least went through the motions of interviewing us. Those are the ones that stand out in my life. I guess I remember.
What college was that?
Cornell.
During your high school years, this was now after the war, did you?
No.
Oh,
it was
okay.
The end of the war.
Oh.
I mean, I guess I was in high school from February 43
mm-hmm.
to February 47.
Mm-hmm.
And so my first 2 years was during the war, and the last 2 years would be after the war.
Could you tell us
about some of those times?
That was an interesting place. Bronx Science was a competitive high school. You had to pass an exam to get in. And so I took the exam. A number of my friends from elementary school were going there. And that's probably where I had the closest friendships. There was a period of 4 years of new people that I was close to. And I would say Bronx Science was probably 95% Jewish. I remember one black guy who was there who lived in Harlem and told us about the strange goings on in his life and his culture. There were a number of non-Jewish white people around, but it was very largely a Jewish environment.
Because of where it was, or because a
mixture of where it was and the Bronx.
There were certain standards to get in?
There were academic standards to get in, and Jewish kids of my generation had parents who, by God, were pushing them along. Typically, first generation, their parents were immigrants. And so the kids were really pushed along and did very well.
This science school, it was public.
The public school.
Okay.
But there were three schools in New York City that had entrance exams. One was Stuyvesant High School in Lower Manhattan. Mm-hmm. One was Brooklyn Tech High School in Brooklyn. And the other was Bronx Science in the Bronx. Bronx Science has 5 Nobel laureates among its graduates. One of my classmates got a Nobel Prize 20 years ago.
Who was that?
Leon Cooper,
mm-hmm.
For work in semiconductors. Not only a classmate, he was one of the members of this club that I belong to.
Mm-hmm.
We used to go down to the 92nd Street Y every Sunday. Go down and have a club meeting with some counselor who would meet with us, and then we'd play basketball or go swimming, and then they'd have a dance afterwards, so we'd go down there and pick up girls, dance with girls, and it was a fun time. We were friends, we were all in the same class. There must have been about 10 of us or so.
Mm-hmm.
Leon was one of them. So the group leader was a guy named Walter Ambinder, who ended up becoming a psychologist. Most of my classmates ended up going to City College. I was reluctant.
How did you get to Cornell?
Hmm?
How did you get to Cornell?
I was reluctant to go to City College because there was a sense that there was prejudice against it, because it was seen as sort of a socialistic place. And so I wanted to go to a private school if I could. I graduated in February and
of
1947.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the few places that had college admissions in February was Pratt Institute in Brooklyn. So I applied for Pratt and got accepted and ended up with a scholarship that covered a very large part of my tuition. And so was in Pratt. And then in spring of that year, New York State had Regents scholarships.
$100.
This was $200 at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. $200. It was $200 a year to cover tuition, but tuition was only about $400 anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So it was designed to it was designed to be geographically distributed, so that each assembly district or New York's equivalent of the House of Representatives was assigned by scholarships in that assembly district. Mm-hmm. So that otherwise they would all have gone to New York, because New York students did a lot better than the rest of the state. The scores on that, and so I got one of those and was delighted. The scores on those were used to award Cornell scholarships, but without geographic distribution. So the first so many would get to go to Cornell. And I remember, and we were able to manage the tuition at Pratt, because with Pratt scholarship and we were able to, my mother was able to scrape it together, and by that time I was working over the summer and was able to earn a few $100 there.
Did you never work until then?
No, I used to deliver flowers.
Mm-hmm.
I remember I earned 60 cents an hour.